last time for this week in a process that is meant to have three seasons, winter and two summers. So the final time that we're going to be studying the future of worship will be at the end of July here at Holden. And tonight is our third time this week. We like to begin to focus on future of worship in the making. And I don't mean that to say anything more than what it says at the top of the handout, and that is, first of all, to look at some of what I would call current worship experiments. By experiments, by and large, these are churches that have been underway for 5 to 20 years and seem to be attracting attention in terms of the substance that they're offering and the difference that they're offering. So my contact with these churches has been mainly through a set of experiences my Methodist bishop has asked me to be a consultant for churches at specific times in their life where they need to think about new directions. And so that's where I've come by what I'm going to be talking to and showing you all about for part of tonight. But what I'm most interested in is not whether these are the right ones to look at, but more what you think of them, so that we really can move as we did substantively yesterday into a question of exchange with one another about different kinds of Christian worship. Just say a word about Christian in that. I know that there are a lot of people here at Holden that are Christian and a lot that are not. I'm happy for both of them myself in their part in worship here at Holden. But because of the troubled character of Christianity in our day, in our country, when one thinks about future, one wonders. Especially, as we said last night, when one sees that Christianity has mostly disappeared in Europe, one wonders. So I think it's presumptuous and important for us to try to get a handle on what's out there, but mostly for us, to, as a kind of a seminar, to think out loud about what is out there, what we think may be promising about it, to be critical of it, and to then ask next step questions about what might happen. In the second part of our time tonight, I'm going to mainly be asking us all questions about what we think the character of worship in the next 5 to 30 years might be, or what we would like it to be. And those, of course, are not the same question, but I'm hoping we can be asking and responding to both of those questions. I'm going to jump right in with two or three videos. Showing a video at Holden is an adventure, especially when the videos are from online. Mm-hmm. But on our staff, we have a magician. Those of you who know Jonah know that he is very helpful in getting this. So we think we have three of what I thought might be seven videos, and that's really magic for Jonah to have succeeded in that. So we will look at a couple of videos first, and we'll stop after each one and make some initial, have some initial thoughts on this. We'll look at the whole list, which is in the handout, a little bit later, and you'll notice that all of, when you get back to Neverland, we'll be able to actually go online, and you would be able to go online at your home. The first video that I would like to show you is a congregation that is called Jubilee Community. It's in Asheville, North Carolina. One of the things you're going to notice about what the thing that the projects that we're talking about, both in video and what I present, is that I've tried to give a broad scope of from where these come from. So this one would not necessarily think that the most experimental project would be coming from Asheville, North Carolina. Anybody been to Asheville?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful place, but it's and it's in North Carolina.
There are actually a lot of church things going on in that area, though.
Yeah,
there really are. It amazes me.
Yeah, there we go. Tell me if you need to hear more.
A little louder.
Jubilee is an incredible celebration of life and spirituality and all the things that make life worth living.
I'm at Jubilee because it's an open place to worship. And it's a place where we can take off our shoes and we can dance and we can hug each other and you can really experience the service with your whole body and your whole heart.
I haven't been much of a church person, you know, and definitely not religious, but when I walked into Jubilee, it was like, damn, this is my spiritual home.
I love Jubilee because it's my home. It's just such a wonderful place. It's such a freeing place.
It's the community, it's the feeling of connection that you have when you walk in there. Connected with Howard, connected with the folks who you know, connected with the folks you don't know. You know, it's just that we are one kind of thing that goes on there.
The life and the energy that Howard and everybody else brings to it, it's wonderful. I couldn't go back to a normal service ever again, not after Jubilee. Jubilee to me is energy, it's also family, it's also connection. You feel not alone, you're a part of a whole.
Renewal is the word I would say. Really prepares you to go back to your weekly life with a deeper appreciation and a deeper concern and more laughter. I get my weekly inspiration from coming to Jubilee.
To me, Jubilee is a verb. It's not just a time and a place, it's something that people do. So while people get together every Sunday and celebrate together and, you know, create this magical hour and 15 minutes of community, that community continues out beyond the walls of Jubilee and into people's homes, into people's hearts, and it's something that people do. So what happens on Sunday is just this crystallization of something that we're doing all week.
Going to different churches, people that come here, the first thing they say is it's very uplifting.
And diverse, you know. We have people from a variety of religious backgrounds here.
I just love the accepting, welcoming environment and the inclusiveness of Jubilee and the non-judgmental, truly decent qualities that I feel Jubilee professes.
Jubilee is a celebration. Every week we come together and we celebrate. We celebrate why we're on this planet. We celebrate why life is worth living. And Howard and the band and the musicians and the poets and the dancers, they come together and they tell us why and they remind us how to be alive. And it fills me up every week.
Jubilee is like earth and sky and heart and everything that's really good about being a human and hard about being a human, but joyful.
Jubilee makes me feel whole.
Well, let's turn up the lights and talk a little bit about what you saw and what you wonder about in this.
Well, I saw a lot of people really excited about church, but I didn't see, I was hungering to know more of, well, what is it? Well, what, show me a service, or, you know, we saw little glimpses of visuals.
Right. For better or for worse, I can probably answer a good portion of that basic question. And although I will probably want to also push us on just what we felt about what we saw, but this was started a little over 20 years ago by a Methodist minister who was tired of his denomination. This is a not a denominational church, but it's not what one would call a non-denominational church, if one means by that an evangelical church. The pastor that founded it is also a fairly famous jazz player and composer. So the most of the music is not hymns, but quite contemporary jazz-based songs that are sung. I think what we saw does indicate that this congregation is over 20 years old, because the people are aging to a certain degree in the pictures. There was a decent diversity in terms of age, but it seemed to me like it was a bit on the older side. I've been there several times myself, but mostly like 15 years ago, rather than now. I keep up with their pastor and some of their staff. One of the main things about what they think about, what they trust and hold valuable, comes from the work of Creation Spirituality and Matthew Fox. So Matthew Fox had about 25 years ago designed what he saw weekly worship might be. And Jubilee Community is the first success in that regard. Matt himself, whom I know quite well, was not really interested in building churches. He's more of a thinker. And those of you who know Matthew Fox's work, is very focused on ecology and what he calls creation spirituality. So the entire year has seasons, but they are seasons of creation spirituality. They're not this standard Advent, Christmas, through Easter, and ordinary time, but rather they're four seasons, not spring, summer, fall, and winter, but seasons of what's going on in nature, and so I can't remember them all, but I know one is darkness, which could be compared perhaps to winter, but it isn't quite. There is basically one, when one becomes a member of this, one is not asked to be a Christian, but one is asked to affirm God in the four seasons of creation. They read scripture regularly, preach on it sometimes, and their songs are, I might say, content-wise, they have scripture in them, they have Christian belief forms in them, and they have a lot of what I would call poetic imagination and images of nature itself. So that's just a little jump, Bonnie, at that. Yes?
I had a question. Chuck. It seemed, the impression I got, that it was very celebratory, using
music and dance and things. So then, does that come out of Matthew Fox's like original blessing versus original sin?
Well, frankly, they are very tied into Matthew Fox's overall program of thinking. Mm-hmm. It's been for me stunning to see that that has stayed focused for these 20 some years. And Matt himself has not been able to stay in any one place for more than 3 or 4 years. But this has been really a powerful, I think, well, it's not quite an ideology, but it certainly is a spirituality that's based deeply within what he calls creation, and some other people might call ecology or nature.
I noticed that, I think, 3 different times during this 6-minute video that people referred to Howard, who I presume is the leader or pastor.
And the founder, yeah.
Yeah, and so he said it's been there for 20 years, founded by this person. And my personal experience has been that sometimes we kind of develop a cult of personality around a leader, and then when that leader passes, things fall apart. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious what your take is on that, if this is based more on someone's charisma, or, you know, I don't know. That concerns me.
You all may know that this is being recorded. So I may say some things and not say some things about that. But that's a really important question. And I think just, Melissa, we should take what you're suggesting to the bank. That is, it really is true that many new, vibrant churches are very focused on a charismatic, and I don't mean Pentecostal, but a charismatic figure. And I think Howard Hanger is that to a certain extent. But I think actually even in the visuals you could see that that's not just the case, because there were so many other participatory events going on in the service. And you could see, for instance, clear social forms that went beyond just a charismatic frame of reference. It, or clearly, if you look carefully, clearly a lot of queer people there. And also it was clear that there are a lot of families with children there.
And the reason for my question is not to try to say anything about that person, but my question is more about, is this sustainable? Like beyond one generation, is it sustainable for a long term? Because I want to think big picture.
Yeah, and exactly. That's the only reason we're talking, as far as I'm concerned. And there have been a fair amount of studies at this, and I would say the answer is somewhat no to your saying, is it sustainable? I think, as I read the literature on this, there's about 25% of vibrant new communities that follow a charismatic pastor for at least a generation that can continue after that pastor has been gone. But so 25%, actually, when you look at successful churches these days, is not bad. I think that the obvious thing that we need to think about, because you've said that, Melissa, is to notice the models in which that's not the case, in which new kinds of worship come into existence and sustain themselves through community effort. So I think that the stark question you raise is very germane. Other thoughts? Yes.
The thing that struck me was the centrality of the worship experience, and they kept referring to feeling uplifted, charged by going to it. So mm-hmm. that becomes a question. We're talking about worship forms, so that's fine, but that's a central piece of why they continue to come, is my assumption from from those comments.
Yeah, no, and that's almost, this of course is very much the case, and you heard those people, a number of them said, I'm actually not really interested in religion or Christianity or something like that, but something here is spiritually powerful for me. So, yes, I think that, and yes, from being there, I can say it's all about their worship. Matter of fact, I would say that some of their educational programs have something to be desired. But the community and the character of worship is really at the heart of it. And again, I wouldn't want to say that is that always should be the lead, because in many successful churches, you find it's the vibrancy of relationships that is the core. Yes.
I'm interested in the music. You said it was primarily jazz, so is there, for any given service, is the music mostly original, or do they do a blend of, I don't know, some traditional folk? Yeah. What?
Well, I think that I am not sure of the answer because I haven't been there recently. But the amount of new compositions is strong. It's mostly by Howard Hanger. But when I've looked specifically at pictures of all of this, you'll notice that some of the musicians couldn't be jazz musicians, meaning there's kind of either hip-hop or country music being played there as well.
Okay.
So that fits with what we were saying yesterday. One of the earmarks of growing new kinds of worship seems to be eclectic music. I do think that the question about whether this is a too charismatic setting, since Howard Hanger is composing a lot of those songs, still holds. Yes?
I just noticed, I was trying to envision what their space was like, because it seemed like everyone was very close, a lot of hand-holding, so I don't know if they create community in a particular way, as a part of doing worship, that leads to kind of the sustainability they're saying about what is beyond Sunday, or whenever worship is. I don't know when worship is.
Sunday. Actually, I think there's a Saturday evening and a Sunday morning worship.
Yeah.
Well, the closeness, frankly, I think, is because they've grown so much.
I wonder.
I mean, they're just crowding. Mm-hmm. When I was there, they weren't quite as close. But it also speaks to the formative relationships that are happening. But I think you're raising something more crucial. The sermon is not central. What is much more central are gestures, rituals that have been embedded in the pattern of their regular worship, and that they claim as what sort of holds them. So I would say lots more prayer, but I wouldn't mean pastoral prayer. All kinds of participatory prayers, both with objects as well as with people speaking from the crowd about from the congregation of what needs they have, what joys they have in the life. Ron first, and then, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of curious if they have what we might call an objective center or a common focus. For example, most Christian churches, the center or the focus is the Bible, Scripture, and that's sort of where we try to find common ground with each other. I don't know whether that's...
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I'm going to know all of this in the next two videos, but I do know that. But before I do that, let me remind be reminded of how these two questions form. It's the circular character of the space itself. It's not just the closeness, but they've always been in a circle, very much like Holden is these days. The spiritual center is creation. And that comes from all kinds of religious material, probably primarily, as with Matthew Fox, primarily Christian, but I think that it would come short of being accurate to say it's a Christian focus or it's a spirit a Christian scripture focus. I think that most people who would walk into there would say, if you would say, is this Jewish, is this Muslim, is this Christian, they almost always say Christian, if that was their choices, or Buddhist or something like that. They would just say, I think it looks Christian enough. Yeah.
Are the screens, is that how they know what's going on?
I don't think I know. You mean
like a projection screen?
Like a projection screen? Because it seemed like it was just all
No, people. it's all spoken and sung.
So they have something in their hand?
They do have something in their hand.
Yeah, I noticed that. And then one person had it under her arm so she could use her hands.
They were being handed something when they came in.
Yeah, like but it could have been, just been a bulletin here, the things of the day. I was kind of curious how they're not.
Are they praising God when you say creation and center? Are they thanking God?
Yes, no, and maybe. In, I think, that order. In other words, it's fairly clear that there are some people who are explicitly not Christian and singing their hearts out, sometimes with Christian words. I think it's also fairly clear that the 40% or so would say they're Christian. And the maybes would be somewhere in between, would be the third level. Some people feel they're Christian sometimes. Now, God, creation spirituality is generally quite God-centered in the writings of Matthew Fox. So I would say God gets more focus than Jesus, and Jesus gets some focus. Let me show you another one. This one is Roman Catholic. Or no, excuse me, I'm wrong again. This is Catholic. We talked our way out of the screen. Okay, here we go. This is, now, no, I'm not gonna do the, I'll do the Catholics last. I'm going to do, since you, many of you are Lutheran, we're going to do the Lutheran one. And it's the one I talked about last night, and it's a very famous Lutheran project, St. Lydia's.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Sikkema, and I've
sorry,
always
sorry, 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 stop, stop, stop.
The ways all kinds of people gather to thank I worship in huge stone cathedrals, tiny flat or chair.
Good job, Hal. Wait a minute, stop.
Hang on. The Reverend Elsa Marty is the pastor of St. Louis. I wanted to talk about how this church worships an integral part of Christian life and the way of life.
We can back up. Also, we are here in Gowanus, Brooklyn.
Yeah, let's just back up right up. I don't want to do that.
St.
Louis. Thank you, Mom. Oh, he didn't.
I'm Chris Sikkema, and I've always liked learning about worship, about the ways all kinds of people gather to thank, praise, and dwell with God. I've worshipped in huge stone cathedrals, tiny clapboard chapels, and a lot of places in between. but a couple of years ago I heard about a little storefront church with a new, maybe old, way of gathering. The Reverend Elsa Marty is the pastor at St. Lydia's. We met to talk about how this church worships, an integral part of Christian life and the way of love.
Elsa, we are here in Gowanus, Brooklyn. Why are we here?
You're here to learn about St. Lydia's. We are a congregation that worships around a meal together, a sacred meal, like Jesus did with his followers. And we're located here in Gowanus, right by the Gowanus Canal.
Yeah, set the stage for some of our viewers. What kind of things are around us right now?
A lot of trash, barbed wire fences, at the same time as rapid gentrification. Rents are going up.
Now that's a situation that I think some of our churches are in right now. You have folks who didn't grow up in the area and wouldn't necessarily darken the door of a traditional church. Tell me about how y'all address that.
So we actually meet in a storefront. Our building doesn't really look like a church. We hope to create a space where people can come and feel welcome, even if they haven't always felt welcome at churches before. You have people who grew up with high church liturgy. You have people who were estranged from their evangelical or Roman Catholic upbringings. We have people who did not grow up Christian at all and have discovered something new and exciting here.
So I think that's really cool that you have discerned that this is a great entry point or even staying point for some members of your community who wouldn't go into a traditional church necessarily. I am going to tell the secret that St. Lydia's isn't an Episcopal church. You mind telling us a little about where it came from?
St. Lydia's was founded by a woman named Emily Scott after she finished divinity school at Yale. And she moved to New York City and she found that people lived in such small apartments, they didn't have each other over for home-cooked meals. And there was a real hunger to gather together. And gradually the community grew and they started a church. St. Lydia's is incorporated as a Lutheran congregation.
So we are connected, our two churches, through Call to Common Mission.
Yes.
I actually lived in New York for a few years before I moved back to Minnesota, where you're from as well.
Yes.
Great connection.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can commiserate with me on this a little bit. Back home, when you go and visit folks, you bring a hot dish or casserole to mm-hmm. the rest of the country, right? You just sit and you talk. Sit down and play cribbage?
Yes.
Always play cribbage, good. But when I moved here, I didn't realize how hard it is to get folks to gather together in that kind of intentional way. It made it really hard to connect with folks on that deeper level. Do you think that's true of the folks at this congregation?
Definitely. I think there's a real hunger for that kind of intimacy around a meal. People find it to be a really helpful way to engage in Christian community in a new way.
And it sounds to me like there is definitely more than just dinner here. Tell me why worship and dinner have gone so well together.
I think it's all about the sacramentality, that this meal is how Jesus welcomes us to the table, and so we turn and share that with others.
You guys have a communion service kind of built into this whole thing.
Absolutely. We start at the table by blessing the bread and sharing it with one another, and we end our meal by drinking from the cup, like Jesus did with his disciples.
You picked a good guy to work on.
Yeah.
At St. Lydia's, everyone gets a job before dinner, whether it's setting the table, welcoming guests, practicing the service music, or chopping vegetables. Because worship isn't a passive experience. It requires using our hands, our hearts, and our souls.
All right.
Okay. So we have to cut it down?
Just in sort of small pieces.
Is this fair trade? And should my thumb have come off while I was doing that?
No.
Okay. Let's reattach that later. Tell me about where you've been between beautiful Roseville, Minnesota, and beautiful Gowanus, Brooklyn.
Well, I went to college at St. Olaf, and then I went to the University of Chicago for my MDiv, and I did an MTH at the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago. I ended up doing an internship with a Lutheran church in North India. I'm working on my PhD in theology right now.
So what do you do in the afternoons? Because this seems like a really easy morning.
I guess I had a nice meal.
Given all of those places and things you've experienced, what does it mean for you to be in this little storefront church in Brooklyn?
I think I have a good appreciation of how wide the church is and that there are so many possibilities for the ways we can worship together. God comes to us where we are and meets us in this meal.
Whether it's bread or wine, but also, what is the name of this soup again?
Tunisian chickpea.
he's sick.
So I was gonna guess. So I hear from people all the time, I'm down with reading the Bible, I'm down with scripture study, but I don't see why I need to be part of an actual worshiping community. I feel like we're losing something when we give up that piece.
I think it's really important that we come together in our embodiedness. Mm-hmm. We hear each other's voices. We hold hands here when we pray. You know, in the Bible, Jesus says, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, I am present.
I think that's right. But what are some of the reasons that you know of that people are really not feeling like they need to be in a worshiping community?
I think sometimes people think that church is like a performance, mm-hmm. and they're not perfect enough to be part of that performance. And worship doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. It's not polished. It's something that we create together.
So are you saying that I'm not going to meet any perfect people here tonight?
I'm afraid you won't.
We're out of here. We are not perfect. We are coming not because we want to thank God for how perfect our lives are, but to kind of draw strength from each other and from God in the process.
Well, Jesus came to heal the sick,
right.
You know? And when we recognize that we need God's grace, that's when our lives are really transformed.
That's right.
After the sermon, we ask congregants to respond to the sermon by sharing a story or an experience. One week, we talked about credit card debt.
Wouldn't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about mental health issues. I think it is a place where people feel like they can come and be loved as they are.
And isn't that so big a piece of it? We come to worship God. We come to strengthen each other in the process. And we find even more than that every single time.
Luke tells us that after the resurrection, Jesus appeared to two disciples on the Emmaus Road who couldn't recognize him. He sat down with them to eat, taking bread, blessing it, breaking it, and giving it to them. Their eyes were open and they recognized him. When we come together to worship, whether it's in a pew with our old friends or at a dinner table with a champion shuffleboard player, I hope we can do the same.
Talk a little bit about that.
It struck me. I never saw more than maybe a dozen or 15 people. So the size of the fellowship is a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a really important one. That space and time, I would say, is around 25. And they've recently asked out of town, shall I say, tourists?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, people who've heard about it around the mm-hmm. country, not to come mm-hmm. because they were overwhelming mm-hmm. The congregation. I think it without the tourists, that evening service goes to about 40, and can go down to 15 or 20. What's happened in the last several years, I know a number of the sort of staff there, is they, because of their growth, they now have waffle service and lunch mm-hmm. service and dinner service.
No ice cream Sunday service.
Not yet. But they would have said no waffle service 4 years ago. So in other words, that same space is for all three meals of Sunday. So I think they think, my sense is they have a constituency of a couple hundred, but since most of them, and frankly I didn't see this quite as much in this video as I have in others, but the plurality of folks are under 35. Mm. I wouldn't have said that about the images here. So that community and demographic is known not to come every Sunday, but I would say there's around 200 who claim themselves to be St. Lydia's folks.
I think that it's a terrific idea and a niche needs mm-hmm. situation there, and for the age group and everything. Anyone here who has a Crucial background knows the power of the agape meal, or can work in so many settings. My hat's off to them. I think that's an amazing response to felt needs.
And wasn't that great to hear how the founding pastor found, actually bumped into the need that the people in that neighborhood didn't have space in their own place to invite somebody over.
Right.
So that is such an organic process, I think. Again, St. Lydia's, I think, is right at 15 years old, and they have had three pastors of equal amount of time. So this, in this case, we don't need to worry about whether this is charismatic. Actually, all three of the pastors have been powerful people, but different personalities.
Yeah. Are they funded through the Lutheran denomination, or are they self-funded?
No, they're self-funding.
Yeah.
And they did not, to the best of my knowledge, I knew a fair amount about the early, very early times. I don't think they got really much money at all from the larger church. Melissa?
One thing that I noticed, and this is just based on what I saw in the video, so it may not be correct, is the first video that we saw, people seemed almost giddy. And it seemed like we were getting them right at the highest, happiest, blissful emotion. And then I wondered, what happens the rest of the week? Mm-hmm. And then these folks were celebrating, but also they're talking about credit card debt. You know, so it seems like they're maybe reaching more of the full spectrum of what I need for sustenance when I go to worship. I need the celebration, and I need help when I'm in a low time. And so it seemed to me that to have, and then that fits with the idea of having a meal, of being fed and nourished on multiple levels. And also there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to the meal, which is also cleaning up the mess.
Right?
And so that's part of spiritually what appeared to be happening based on the video. So to me, there was an interesting difference in the two.
Yeah.
Two models.
And I just happened to, because I was a professor in New York, I happened to have a number of my students going to Lydia's and so they were commuting from Brooklyn to Upper West Side at Union. And those folks were always in need of facing difficulties, which they faced a lot of. Yes.
There are many children seem to be part of that setting.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm wondering if the waffle service has.
I was just going to say no. The waffle family, the waffle service is like kids galore. And there is, for instance, although again the evening and the lunch service have small sermons. Not very much sermon, but a small sermon. The waffle service has no sermon, but has a whole range of participatory action by the children. So it's like, what you might want to say, the waffle service is like one big, long children's moment in regular church, done tremendously better.
Well, the children's moment is often just a clip notes for the sermon anyway, right? I mean, sometimes I don't get the sermon if I haven't listened to the children's moment.
Yeah, right, yeah, right. Yes.
The whole thing of this seems like the kind of thing that almost any congregation could do in their community by picking up a storefront space and having an innovative, maybe a small group of people that would embrace this to reach out to a neighborhood or a type of people that maybe wouldn't come to their church to expand their ministry?
Yeah. So it does. I mean, St. Lydia's is a major national factor right now.
Yeah.
It is leading. So there are St. Lydia's, I mean, it's not the same name, but there are between 50 and 100 that I know congregations
doing this type of outreach.
And they're actually, some of them are not doing it exactly like St. Lydia's and some are. And the really fascinating thing for me, relative to the larger decline of churches, is that, of course, since I'm in the church business, one of the main set of crises in church, in declining churches, is what to do with the big buildings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No problem here. Yeah. And of course, one of the main things about why you're wanting to do, what should we do with this big church, is it costs so much money. Mm-hmm. So the budget for St. Lydia's is modest in all kinds of ways.
Yeah. Well, I think I've discussed this with you before. When we're in Massachusetts, we go to a dinner church, mm-hmm. and it's similar to St. Lydia's. It's a UCC church. Mm-hmm. And we're in the basement of a very, very large UCC historical church, the Jonathan Edwards Church. And so we have dinner church, and it looks similar in that we gather to worship in a circle around the tables with candles. It's bigger, and we have maybe 60 people. Mm-hmm. But it's a little, the pastor there's taken it even another step, which is it's a farm-to-table church. Mm-hmm. So almost everything we eat all year is grown in the garden. They have three garden plots, one which is the food's given away, and two which is used for the meal. So basically it's a pretty simple meal with soup and bread. People come and make the soup together. A local bakery makes the bread, clean up, and so forth.
Once a week, is it?
This is every other week now, but it's going to once a week, I think Sarah wants to. And it's a lot of people are involved with growing the food, too, so it's kind of appealing to people who want to actually grow food and can it and things, because we eat the food all winter, too.
And may I ask, St. Lydia's has stayed relatively liturgical.
We are liturgical, and it's similar to St. Lydia's. Uh-huh. In fact, Sarah Buteau, the pastor, has mentored, St. Lydia's mentored her uh-huh. in beginning this church. This is a very large building, but it's really well used. There's five congregations. Another interesting one, which I'm not so involved with, is called Cathedral in the Night. And they meet at 5 o'clock on Sunday on the streets and offer a meal and communion every week, no matter what the weather is. They're outside on the street, and their logo is Jesus was homeless. Mm-hmm. And that's an Episcopalian priest and a Lutheran pastor does that. So it is a large building, but it's used by many congregations.
And that again, is one of the growing things across the country. Yes.
One thing I skipped over quickly, but I think it's important, is that they looked at what the neighborhood needed.
Yeah.
And the congregations I know that are growing or vibrant, whatever you want to call that, they ask their neighbors what they need. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would want to say even more powerfully for St. Lydia's, they didn't just ask what they need economically
exactly.
or socially, but spiritually.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it turns out that their address to the spiritual needs and to the economic needs have something in common with one another.
Well, I mean, the one congregation I'm aware of that, it's not a big congregation, but it's very vibrant. They have meals for the homeless. They have a after-school program for the kids in the neighborhood, and they have a midweek evening service because there were people in the congregation that I can't come on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a much more casual service.
Yeah.
But they're looking at different ways of meeting needs, both spiritually as well as the physical needs of what their neighborhood is in.
Yeah. Yeah. Ron?
In a way, this also seemed kind of retro. It is how I sometimes imagine the early Christian community. The early Christian groups, they would gather in, a common area or a home or something like that. My imagination says they probably ate food.
No. You don't need the imagination. All you need is the Bible to know that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, what I was calling on, is we had a model of the congregation we belong to, 6,000 member congregation, and organically groups began to form that went into the home. So we would have 12 people, the same 12 people, every other week in our home. And then the whole focal point was a meal together and sharing bread and wine together, rooted in some scripture. But I think what grew out of that was this intimacy with the group.
truly grow together spiritually because you really trusted one another and you had something beyond just a corporate worship to really embed yourself into.
And I think some of you heard earlier in the week from my having done speaking engagements in Korea at churches where they're also doing meals, both on Sunday morning and once a week in homes.
Mm-hmm. Would this in some way be a hybrid of a house church, potentially? Or, as you were just saying, it could be a big church breaking into small groups mm-hmm. part of the time, mm-hmm. and both speak to that intimacy, kind of a notion.
Yeah.
So that would be relative to at least the structure of whatever is existing.
And I would want to say that I think the evangelical, large evangelical churches have done that the best. Yeah. In other words, most of the big evangelical churches in the thousands will have small groups where, that have meals regularly together. Let's look at one more. If someone would need to say one more thing. Okay. Ron, help me if I need it.
I'm at the ready.
All right. This is St. Miriam's.
My name is Bob Wilson. I'm number 376.
My name is Tiffany Briner, and my number is 511.
My name is Sean Little. My number is 105.
I was searching to find a place that really was so accepting, so warm, so friendly. And I found it here at St. Miriam's, and this is what I've always thought church should be.
My name is Deborah Ragusa, and my number is 474.
I was, you know, kind of fed up with the politics of the Roman Catholic Church.
There shouldn't be judgment in belittling talk, but unfortunately, that is so when you go to some churches.
My name is Sean Hall, and I am number 2.
My name is Monsignor Jim, and I'm number 1.
Here in our home at St. Miriam's, I see that love and care and support.
My name is Kristen Melford.
My name is Dante Milligan.
My number is 510.
My number is 511.
St. Miriam is a community where you feel welcome from the moment you step into our doors, and there are no boundaries, no man-made or artificial boundaries here. So, in short, St. Miriam truly is for everybody. As I grew older and was in college, I became less and less involved in church until I realized that there was something missing in my life.
My name is Kathleen Duncan, number 389.
My name is Deacon Dorothy Clemis, and I am number 305.
My name is Father Joseph Clemis, and my number is 306.
I think I just Googled, you know, open and accepted Catholic churches, and St. Mary popped up, and so let's go. We went and loved it.
Church is supposed to be about community and fellowship and not just getting your card punched to, you know, like some quota system to stay out of hell for another week.
And it's not that they have to come because it's an obligation anymore. They're coming because of the welcome. They're coming because of the feeling they get when they walk in. Something like this church is very, very warm. It's accepting. That, I believe, is the best calling card of this.
It's not a bad threat that unless you come here, you know, something terrible is going to happen to you.
We're all at different places in our lives.
St. Miriam is always a place where every Sunday I look forward to getting up and being able to go, participate, be with other people. I can place it in one word, it's congruence. We are absolutely congruent. What you see on our website, what you'll hear in this video, the people that you'll meet when you come to attend one of our masses or special events, it's all congruent. It's all the same. And I think that that's what people want. They want authenticity in their life. They want congruence in their life. And I think, I know, St. Miriam has it.
There are no obstacles, no hurdles, no tests, just open hearts and open doors and a story of second chances. Why not join us? Claim your number and discover your story at St. Miriam.
You know, full sentence here, okay?
Let me say just a few words about this. So this is not a Roman Catholic church. It's a, the priests, there are four of them, I believe, have been Roman Catholic churches. They are all out gay men. And St. Miriam's, I believe, is about 9 years old. It's grown fairly rapidly in suburban Philadelphia. They say, we're really Catholic, and we're really not Roman Catholic. And they proclaim their openness to all people, especially across sexual orientation boundaries. Their worship is fairly predictable Catholic. Mm-hmm. So it looks like a standard Catholic worship, except that there are a lot of differences in the congregation. So, for instance, the amount of African-American people in the video is actually also shown in the congregation itself, even though this is a suburban congregation. Priests can be married, and women or men. Right now, if I remember, I think one of them is a woman. But it's fairly dominated by the men so far.
Where is it?
In suburban Philadelphia, about 7 miles from my house.
Oh.
So, yeah, comments, questions?
What were the numbers? They kept saying my number is.
Oh, that's when they joined?
It's just a gimmick.
Right, yeah.
It occurs to me, because our discussion the other day about ritual and worship and mm-hmm. how it may not be any kind of emotion or wonder or awe or excitement. Well, if you came from a liturgical background, as someone who grew up Roman Catholic did, but you had to fall away from them for 8 million different reasons, mm-hmm. and when you thought you felt a hunger to reconnect in a church community, naturally you look for something that is familiar to you. And this, once again, this is really niche marketing.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Boy, they can bring in all the good things about Catholicism and none of the bad. And it's all open door. And we had a oddly Catholic sect, the old Catholics, who were renting some space in our parish for a while. And we had a great relationship with them. They were lovely people. Yeah, there was none of the Church of Rome stuff, you know. And I just think these people are fabulous. I bet they'd be great to worship with.
Well, and obviously one of the main things going on here is the exiting of so many Roman Catholics from their situation because of the tragedies in sexual violence, and so this also has a sexuality dimension of it, but in a positive way, is not to be missed. And it would seem to me that in these three that we've had, it is rich emotional life, a lot of energy, without being and being very, very open to one another.
The very open struck me in the front of the beginning of the video, where they said no boundaries whatsoever. And I thought that was kind of so very open, no boundaries, and yet unless you have some sense of safety in boundaries. So it's just interesting hearing more about the background to say, maybe understand more where that comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, so these pastors, the woman was a nun and the men were priests. They all got kicked out.
Are there other churches like that around the country?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did a...
Seattle, for instance?
I don't know for sure in Seattle, but I wrote a book about 10 years ago called A New Spiritual Home that surveyed 1,000 different new churches in, and I know that there were, that showed a whole bunch of them, of these kind of Catholic churches growing all across the country.
But there's a lot of Catholicism. They call it a mass.
Yep.
Liturgical forms.
Oh, yep.
And that's not a problem for them, which is fine. It's experience out.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was wondering was, it sounds like they carry the traditions and liturgy, but how about the teachings and the theology? Don't they have to sort of break away from what they originally were connected to?
No, so these priests were Roman Catholic priests, yep. but I think it's called the Antioch Catholic mm-hmm. movement, mm-hmm. And that's like 700 years old. And they've always been different, for instance, on issues of marriage, in contrast to the...
So there's already a theology.
Oh, there's already a theology and a set of traditions. And of course, no tradition stays the same as ours don't and theirs don't.
Something that seems to be missing for me is a sense of the challenge that Christ calls us to. It's not all about feeling good and belonging and being happy and warm. It's, you know, part of the reason I go to church is to be challenged, and I don't get challenged enough, frankly. But we are called to live differently than the materialism and, you know, what seems to be rooting in America. You know what I mean? So maybe we're just not seeing it. And I do recognize that people have to first be grounded and have community before they can step out into that, but...
Well, first of all, I think that's right with these three examples. It's not right in the others on the list, on some of the others, but actually I see us in this work talking about worship. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I haven't focused on what the mission out has been. I wouldn't know quite as clearly which ones do and don't, but I know that there is some difference in that.
But doesn't there need to be an element in worship that that fosters that?
I'm at the moment trying to stay away from what's needed and just in a listening mode. It seems to me quite clear that a lot of Christians' relationship to needs in the world are powerfully felt. Without digressing from worship, I would say, I would tend not to worry about that, but because I think that's such a natural element in a lot of Christian expression. And I guess I would say this the opposite right now, at least in the worlds I follow in, there are a lot more churches that are really struggling to have good worship than good outreach to the needs of the community. Mm-hmm. In other words, I see that being more active in a whole bunch of churches reaching out to needs, trying to address violence and hurt and loss in the larger world. In America, it feels to me like that's going better than worship. That's just a guess. And I myself feel it really important to do that. But for I say it that way because I see churches, a bunch of churches that I work with as a consultant, they can't get over themselves with how great they are helping others in order to think about how their worship might change. I see that all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I would say going out into the world in ways that I think is really important doesn't seem to automatically produce deep worship.
Mm-hmm. Leading up to today, you talked about one of the movements, kind of the deinstitutional, you know, like no longer institutions being valued in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I'm struck in some ways by smaller seems better in some of what we're seeing tonight. Mm-hmm. And I don't recall if you said much about mega churches, whether the mega church movement is also kind of going away, mm-hmm. and smaller is better. I don't know. I mean, I know that there's some struggle. You know, numbers going down has not been seen as better, but there's a way in which a smaller community maybe trusts itself more than a large community. I don't know. I'm just thinking about.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, and I want to link this back to what Bonnie said too. So new experiments are generally fairly small. So I myself would want to say that it's complex how much large and small and middle sized, what their various gifts are for people. It's hard to figure on that. And I think we're too early in some of this renewal to know for sure. But the statistics on the statistics on evangelicals and megachurch evangelicals is that those figures are going down pretty significantly in that. But I would say there are still a lot of those big churches, the mega churches, and they do quite well in having small groups meeting in homes in that regard. This does remind me, go ahead, if you need to. Oh,
no, okay. Finish up and then I'll go.
Yeah. I was just thinking about one of the bigger churches on this list. And that is Middle Collegiate in New York City. It is a stunning Reformed church. I think they're about 1,700 members. They're fairly new. And they are intensely interracial. They're denomination is relatively conservative, but they are welcoming of queer people and all kinds of other poor people as well. It's in the southern part of Manhattan, and they're full of all kinds of artistry, and just to bring back the other question about going out, they're like ferociously present in needs in the social and economic way. Hi. We have only 12 minutes left. I'm going to give you this list, encourage you to think more about that. Those of us who might be here in July, that's applies really only to staff, I think, might want to do some work on this list of places I haven't shown online. But I would like to spend the last 12 minutes on these questions. And I'm going to read them all and then go back from the top, and we'll see whether we get to one, two, or three. So I will ask this question for the next 5 to 30 years of the future of Christian worship. And I say Christian just because this is a longer-term question for Christians. I'm a Christian. I don't know much about other religions here in terms of worship. So these are questions that have come through our conversations this week. How much interreligious worship would you like, or will there be? So yesterday we were talking a lot about the growth and the health of Buddhist practice in America. So I want to know what you think about in 11 years, whether we're going to have more Buddhist worship styles in Christian churches, or whether you would like one. You're going to ask, how much local church, how much local worship will there be? I think it's a narrow focus to think that American Protestantism is the only model. You know, there are a lot of times in the history of churches where people went a long ways, almost pilgrimly, to the cathedral.
They always come to Fulton like that, yeah.
That's true. This is a kind of cathedral, and there are 400 of us now, right?
Watch out.
What?
Yeah, watch out. Here we go.
Right. How much denominational worship? We talked a lot about the withering of denominations in America. And notice how much this has to do with worship. If you don't have a denominational livelihood, that will make worship different. How much online social media worship will there be in 15 years or 3 years? I know them. I know some. Right now there's a lot of online worship. And that's not at all just somebody broadcasting the service from someplace else. How much new God language? How many new words for worship? So for instance, there are a lot of folks now who are beginning to say, actually saying, would you come to worship, is counterproductive. And other words are being used. How much sermon-based worship would there be in 8 years or 20? What kind of music in worship? We had a little bit of conversation there. I know what I'll do to take into account my bad time management. Any of you pick any of these questions that you would like to answer, either for what you want or what you think will happen. Yes?
I was going to say, the one thing that was the same in all three of those, I mean, they're very different forms, is they all were more accepting of differences of people coming in, whether it was the LGBT community, a racial difference, congregation running is very accepting of people with different disabilities. So I think where I see the future is going is that people are going to have to break down and realize God loves everybody.
Beautifully said.
Can you give us an example of new words for worship?
Would you come to our community gathering? Some of us are getting together to talk about hard times and good times in our life. Those are ways that are beginning to dodge what seems to be the spiritual but not religious people saying, I wish there was a place that I could go to be spiritual, to meet my needs, to reach into the world with power. So, in other words, just labeling it churchy is a question.
Part of it is, in our church, we have a worship council that has, what, 5 people, and everybody's but one is staff or on the large congregational council. But the social action one has like 30 people. They all want to be on that committee. And I thought, well, maybe we're calling it worship and that's just not attractive.
Well, I think in our last 2 sessions, for me it's clear that American church has got itself in a bind and not thinking deeply about what worship needs
are. Well, we want creativity, but we can't, you know, it's like how do you attract people that would like this, you know?
Oh, yeah, ideas? And yeah, right. At least 2 of these churches are showing artists coming in.
Mm-hmm. One of the problems is the word worship. If you accept that in postmodernism there is a skepticism and rejection of the institutions, then worship is an institutional term that we understand as insiders. And those outside the church, and we have a couple generations now who are essentially unchurched, not to mention the countless millions who have left the church for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So when we say worship, that's not acceptable to them.
Right.
So those new words for worship are going to be really key.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish I knew what they were.
I do too. But I do know that, for instance, the evangelicals are ahead in that, in having questions like faith.
And you know, this baffles me because I find fundamentalism practically abhorrent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I wasn't saying that.
Because I'm
that
such a good Christian.
But what do you think, what does the future look like on that question?
Why fundamentalism is so successful?
No, I mean the question you were...
Oh, I don't know, but I think that the way we move forward is to focus on what gathering in community to be open about our weakness and our flaws and to be filled with the Holy Spirit and on a journey, the way of Christ, that this, and I wish I had specifics, but it's these things together that will reestablish or revitalize the church as we know it in our society.
Thank you. Melissa's? You got one of the questions?
Yeah, I was thinking about what does the future look like, and one of the questions is about local. And I was noticing that all of your examples appear to be urban examples. And I come from a rural background, but I think they could be adapted to a rural setting. And so I think the future has to be something that can be adapted to an individual setting, because I think what people are craving in all 3 of these examples is intimacy. And we're talking about, you know, world music and all these other little pieces where we take the best of to nourish ourselves in worship. And I think if we looked at that in a sort of framework that could be adapted to individual communities, then I think it can be. Instead of holding fast to like one particular way of doing things, if we have a set of principles that can be, and we can live within those principles, if we understand the underlying reason for doing things and then make it work for each individual community, we could have some commonality, all these little groups, and like these little house churches, if they could come together in a way to say, this works for our church and this works for whatever word you want to use, not necessarily church. And then I think that's going to be the important thing too, is can we be local but then communicate with each other? And maybe that's the piece of the online worship, is connecting these individual communities.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, that's a clear answer and a strong one, yes.
I serve a congregation that works very closely with Lutheran Campus Ministry, so we're all housed in the same building and the context, and so Alex can help me here. Weekly worship for them is called Pause.
Yeah.
So maybe a name is a description of what, you know, a pause, and I think, what's the tagline?
Oh, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's kneel, prayer, community, or belong, be curious, something like that.
Huh?
And students are thronging there. So that's another, you know, pause. And then, are you coming to pause? Going to pause.
I think that relational aspect is, but it's a different, it's transitioning from what we had before. But I think social needs and interpersonal interactions and also ownership of whatever's happening there. Because one of the problems, I think a lot of the big institutional churches, they've decided to follow a business model as far as management and control. And that's what's turned off a lot of the young people as well as many others. So I think there's like aspects of this thing. And one is people want to have relationships. We're just not sure exactly where the norm is right now because there's so much going on. But I think that's got to continue to be part of what it is to be in a congregation. So that relational thing strikes me. But the other thing is, how do we institutionally organize it so it's not so hierarchical and so power-focused? That's a lot of what's happening in the Missouri Synod. Is a lot of people said, we don't want a hierarchy. And others are saying, no, we're still comfortable with it because it's keeping us safe. So, I'm not sure what, but coherence in theology, common agreement around a creed or something rather than 8 million words that some people then try to enforce. So I think that's a part of it. So I think there's a lot of blocks that fit into this thing, what may emerge.
Thank you. I'm going to thank everybody because we need to hold to our own worship coming up at it.
Our own.
But thank you very much for working. So these three sessions were hard work. So I appreciate very much you're really throwing yourself into this, we will there will be next steps in this thinking as we go forward. Thanks so much.
Thank you.